This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman.
And we're having 20-minute talks with entrepreneurs teaching you how to launch your product into revenue.
Check out our book at howtobuildarocketship.com to reserve your launch discount and to download a free chapter.
In today's episode, we talked with Heaton Shaw, founder of Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics. We talk about the pros and cons of funding versus self-funding, and the impact each can have on your focus and early stage strategy. Heaton also talks with us about some common mistakes he sees early stage companies making time and time again.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. We're here with Heaton Shaw, the founder of Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg. Heaton, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about getting started with Crazy Egg. Kind of take us back to what that looked like for you.
Yeah, Crazy Egg was one of the first sort of SaaS products we built, my co-founder and I built, with the help of actually outsourced engineers at the time in the U.S. though. And it was built mainly from a need that we saw while we were running a marketing consulting company where people were trying to understand data in a very it was very difficult to understand data at the time. All we had was Google Analytics and a bunch of other analytics tools, but it was all numbers and stuff like that. And so we noticed the problem, and then we wanted to figure out what to do about it. And we tried a bunch of experiments. One of the ones that ended up working was Crazy Egg, where we basically show people where their visitors are clicking on their web pages. And you know, being the marketers that we were, we knew that it would take a while to build the product. So what we did is we actually put up a page that collected email addresses. This was before that trend was popular. This was in about end of 2004, beginning of 2005. And we collected, I think, like 23,000 email addresses before we even launched the product.
Wow.
And from there, yeah, it was like a little teaser. I mean, it's pretty cool to show a website and show like a heat map on top of it. So, yeah, it was pretty cool back in the day. And we had just found interesting ways to promote that page, such as we bought some ads. That was one of the only times we bought ads business until recently on a bunch of the CSS galleries. So for anyone that doesn't know, those are CSS. This is when CSS was becoming an HTML, pre-CSS3, pre-HTML5, but it was becoming a more popular way to build interactive sites at the time. And this was like after the whole wave of flash sites and stuff like that in the beginning of sort of HTML and CSS. And so, yeah, we noticed that we could promote to those sites.
So when you were building, how did you handle kind of balancing your agency and then you had this product that you were pushing at the same time? How did you balance the workload?
Yeah, one of the tricks we used is we just made we treated the work on our own products as just another client. And so we used that sort of strategy to kind of keep doing the product work but not get unfocused from dealing with our customers. And so the biggest thing was just treating it like another customer and slotting in that customer, slotting in the time and things like that. That way it didn't feel like something completely different or alienate what we were doing on the other side of the business.
And so when you were kind of promoting this heat map, take me back to, I can't remember if Google was doing the heat map. Were they doing the heat map at this time, or was this a completely new idea for marketing?
So they've never had a heat map. They still don't. But they had something called a site overlay.
That's what it was, yeah.
There was a few other products, a product called ClickTrax, and then even Omniture, I think at the time, had a site overlay or something similar. The problem is all of those site overlays were based on page view data, and they weren't actually based on interactivity on a page. So when people could click on things that didn't lead to another page view. So one big key thing we noticed was their site overlay was very inaccurate because it was unable to differentiate between two links that go to the same page on the page. So it would just combine it and say, well, you had 50 people go from the top link and 50 people go from the bottom link because it was summing up the data. So it was actually pretty inaccurate. Our system could tell the difference between the top link and the bottom link.
And you can also track stuff that isn't a link, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So we were tracking what we called dead clicks. So clicks that wouldn't go anywhere. We would track things even like clicks on images and any other sort of, at that time when people called it Ajax, any kind of Ajax-y stuff too.
So what today, what's your focus like? Are you working on both Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg? Is there a team on Crazy Egg? How's it look?
Yeah, there's about five people on Crazy Egg that are working full-time, not counting my co-founder and I. We don't really spend too much time on it today, personally. And most of our time is either spent on Kissmetrics or just, you know, helping these people that are the five people that are working on Crazy Egg just kind of keep working on it.
So what I'd actually like to dig into a little bit is you launched your first product self-funded. You treated it kind of like one of your clients and grew it from there. When you launched Kissmetrics, you went the VC route. Why did you make that decision to go differently?
Yeah. We actually tried raising money for Crazy Egg and were turned down quite a bit. At that time, I think people didn't really understand the value of how all these small, medium businesses are going to want tools. And enterprise and B2B was considered mostly an enterprise effort, not necessarily the kind of small, medium business market we saw today. And so based on that, we just started building a bunch of relationships with a bunch of these investors. And at Crazy Egg, we ended up wanting to work on a second product, and that's what ended up being Kissmetrics. And when we started talking to investors about that product and the vision for it, they got a lot more excited about pretty much wanting to, you know, kind of partner with us and give us some money so we can make it sort of a bigger business than we even originally thought. So that's how we got funding for Kissmetrics. From a more personal perspective, my co-founder and I, we were really focused on trying to learn, and we had a desire to learn what like funding looked like, and so that's most of the reason why we did that.
What does it look like?
It's different. So I guess that's the first thing I would say. And what I mean by that is someone's giving you money to spend on your business so you can grow it as fast as possible. Also, the way you think about your business is a little bit different because you're sort of thinking about how to build a bigger business sort of a little bit either faster or a little bit much broader than what you would originally, what you might have originally considered. And so, it's different, and people are essentially giving you money to join the kind of ride of building your business, which makes it so that you have sort of other people that are invested in it and want to see it get big, which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing.
So what have you done differently with Kissmetrics in terms of growth that money allowed you to possibly pursue, or is there a difference in way you approached your marketing for between Crazy Egg and Kiss?
Yeah, we were able to kind of what I would call like spend before it was justifiable from an ROI perspective. So we were able to, you know, spend money on our blog, spend money on all these areas that even at Crazy Egg, like we didn't really spend money on for a very long time until it absolutely made sense. So in a self-funded business, you're sort of making money and making investments with a short-term sort of ROI perspective, just because you probably don't have any money. And you're going to do a lot more things with your time in that case that are hopefully smarter, and you're measuring for short-term gain. While when someone gives you money, you're able to make some longer-term bets much earlier in the life cycle of the business than you would as a self-funded business.
Was there anything that you found that you were able to apply to Crazy Egg from the experimentation you were able to do with Kiss Marketing?
We didn't really think about it like that. We've always considered the businesses two sort of separate businesses. The short answer is I think we're always learning. I don't think we've strictly looked at it like, what do we learn doing Kissmetrics stuff that's going to help Crazy Egg? More importantly, I think it's more about what have we learned just about running SaaS businesses, because they're both SaaS businesses in general.
So all four of us are going to be at MicroConf this year in Vegas, and you're actually giving a talk about what's the talk that you're giving?
It's one of my favorite conferences. It's always hard to show up there and sort of give a great talk for me, even compared to the other ones, because it's just mostly about self-funded entrepreneurs and stuff like that. And so this year I came up with just how to grow a business as fast as possible, based on sort of my experience, but also the experience of talking to a bunch of other entrepreneurs and helping a bunch of them. So the official title talk is How to Grow Your Self-Funded Business Faster. And the general summary is it's really about me outlining valuable growth and scaling tactics. I'm still debating exactly how I'm going to frame it. One of my latest thinking right now is that I think there's a lot of things that people don't talk about when it comes to self-funded businesses and even SaaS businesses in general. And that has a lot to do with, like, one thing, it's philosophies that lead to tactics that will help you think about your business in a different way. And so everybody talks about A/B testing or tests they've run that win, or things like how to increase your growth rate or how to validate your idea. Even I've talked about that, or even like, you know, the emails you should be sending your customers and or users. And so I'm going to talk more about like just higher level thinking that you can have that help you think about growth in the business and how to grow it faster as a self-funded business. And a lot of it has to do with like the time you spend and where you put your energy at what at different points in the life cycle of the business. And then the other parts of it have to do with like really interesting or valuable, I would say, tactics that I've used around how to think about the business and strategies that kind of will help with that. So hopefully it's things most people have not heard before. And then also my practical sort of implementation of those things as well.
So if you were approaching Crazy Egg again today, I know there's a lot of factors that would be different, but is there a change in how you would think about the growth and the potential of that company bootstrapping it now compared to before?
Yeah, you know what's interesting these days is that when we started, it wasn't about funding. Like, we never really thought about that, except when we started going and pitching people a couple years later. But like, we really thought about it like, we just want to solve a problem for people. And that was a fundamental thing that we thought about and focused on. And so I don't think that part of it would change. The part I think that I would think about a lot more would be the sequence of things and when we did them. So we spent a lot of time early on getting email addresses of users. Believe it or not, we really didn't email them until the product was launched. So one thing would be, you know, and it's pretty popular these days, is actually keep emailing them every week with something useful and interesting to them, but also that keeps them more sort of interested in what we're building, and share the story with them more, which is not something we did. And the other part of it would be, I think we wasted a lot of time not spending money on advertising, and we could have started spending money on advertising much earlier just to test what would work and what wouldn't work for us. And that probably would have led to a different approach to the product in general and how we thought about it. Like, you know, think about customer acquisition more. At some point we ended up killing a free plan that we have. So now there's no free plan. I probably would have, you know, did a double take on that decision, knowing what I know now. So there's a bunch of little stuff like that, but higher level, I think the bigger thinking I have is just like, What's the kind of market you're entering or we're entering, and how can we think about it in a more deliberate way? Those are probably the more key takeaways. And so it's a lot more upfront thought about how this thing grows and where it's going, regardless of funding. I think that's something that I don't see a lot of people do. They just want to solve a problem they've had and put it out there. And I think there's a lot more to it than just that.
Hey guys, hope you're enjoying the episode. I wanted to take a minute to thank CodeShip for sponsoring the show. We've been happy customers of theirs for a very long time. If you'd like to see how we use CodeShip to deploy our product Hookfeed, go watch the short video we put together at howtobuildarocketship.com/CodeShip. Enjoy the rest of the episode. I think you hit the nail on the head. I know with us, we lacked a lot of the deliberate thinking early on because we were just building something that we wanted, and we figured other people would want it too. The sort of 37 signals approach. And now we're hitting a point where we need to start thinking bigger about Hookfeed, and you know, we're finding ways to do that. But I wish we would have done it way sooner, because it would have changed the trajectory of the product. So that's good to hear that it's the same with you.
So you actually mentioned that you would have advertised sooner. In today's landscape, would you give that advice still to self-funded companies that are kind of in those early stages? Do you think that's still worth the investment now?
Yeah, I think you do it for different reasons. We would have done more advertising around the value proposition, or I would do more value proposition testing and things like that in today's world, and less so around just for acquiring customers. So I think there's a lot of people that would benefit from doing advertising that they might not be thinking about right now for purposes beyond just acquiring the customer, but more understanding and assessing the demand for what they're doing and what they're going to do.
And so for some of those kind of early stage companies, sales is such a important component, and it's something that I think we all kind of veer away from at times. What happens after you grab someone's email? What is your strategy for converting them into a customer?
I think it's actually very difficult to create content that actually converts. And so what we tend to do is create content that people love and use that to get their email address so we can give them more content they'll love, and in the process of that, set up some systems so that we can actually get them to buy into the promise of a product of ours, and then use that to sort of upsell them into signing up for the product or something like that. So I guess for me, about it is these are just ways to get people into your funnel sooner than before they're ready to kind of sign up for a trial or something like that. And there's a lot of ways to do that. I mean, with Kissmetrics, actually the original thing that helped grow the business was a Twitter account, not the blog. And the Twitter account led to the blog. And so to me, I'm always looking for an opportunity that other people have not discovered right now around how to get the attention of potential customers. And believe it or not, for Kissmetrics, it was actually Twitter first, not the blog. And the Twitter account and the traffic we were able to gain and the attention is what led to kind of the blog.
And have you found that you need a lot of like one-on-one contact to really convert a lot of people? I mean, do you have a staff that gets on the phone and actually talks people through the product to convert them? Or is the self-serve model kind of working just after a certain period of time of the right messaging?
It's a good question. In my experience, it really depends on how much you're charging. So if you're a service like Amazon, where you can charge very little and someone can get started basically for free, even if like in 3 or 4 months they end up paying you tens of thousands of dollars, you might never need to talk to someone just because it's like sort of API based, easy to get started, and it's likely that you're selling to developers. If you're selling more of a product like we do for marketers, if the price points are under like $100 a month or maybe even $500 a month, depending on the product, you generally can convert people by having them sign up online and making it self-service. At Kissmetrics, the starting point is about $150 a month. And so in that case, like, we found it really valuable to help people sort of walk people through it and things like that. But all of that really depends on what the product is and who you're targeting and what segment of the market is a sort of, you know, you want to reach.
So the people that are on the phone talking to customers or leads, would you not really consider them a sales team and more like a customer success onboarding team?
It depends on the business. Some people need to be sold. Like, some at some price points, people really want to be sold on the product and want to get a lot of help, you know, trying it out and stuff like that. And in other cases, you can get away with like not having to talk to them at all.
You talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. It's one of the things that you're known for. Is there kind of a common mistake that you see people making in the early stages that you would love to give them kind of a tip about?
I feel like that you when you're usually starting out, these days there's enough information out there to, you know, for you to learn anything you want to learn from either a blog post or a ebook someone's selling you, or even a free sort of video. So the content's out there and there's more and more of it. And there's even people like all three of you that have shared stuff in blog posts, and stuff like that. And there's, you know, hundreds more like you guys and also me. And so the biggest thing I see people doing is having, some level of paralysis around what to focus on and what order they should be doing different tasks for their business or their company or for making progress in their business. And so, you know, I call these things basically like what you're really trying to do is focus in on what's most important right now. And when there's so much content out there and so much different advice, most of the conversations I end up having with people are mostly about what order they should be working on some of these things. And it's very hard to pinpoint it and say, hey, this is the one thing everyone should know. But I think the one thing that I would recommend everyone think about is, are you working on the right thing right now? And that's very personal based on your own sort of strengths and weaknesses, but also where this product or business is at right now. And so most of the stuff has to do with focus and sequence of what you do and when you do it.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, we absolutely struggle with that on a daily basis and what we should be focused on. I'm sure most people listening to this can definitely identify with that.
Thanks so much for coming on, Heaton.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. This is one of the most interesting topics. And I think a lot of, you know, one of my things is that a lot of people don't have experience with funding and self-funding and building successful businesses, or at least growing businesses on that level. So always happy to talk about it.
Where can we keep up with you online?
Probably Twitter is the most active place I am right now.
Awesome. HN Shaw.
You got it. Yep.
Perfect. Thank you.
For sure.
Thanks, Heaton.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you haven't yet, pop open iTunes and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. We have some really great ones lined up.
And while you're there, leave us a review. We really appreciate each and every one of them. If I'm keep rocking on existing to these juggernauts, but I'm an architect, an astronaut, an organized. So hey, you get off my couch. You don't know me, say the fuck out my mouth. But I'm a writer, you can quote it out loud. A false poet, get my dough and I'm out. But here's an eighth of shrooms for your earlobe. A little rap wrapped in cigarillo. A little bit of Wu-Tang mixed with some Henry David Thoreau. A little ponder theory you can ponder on your pillow. This is for the day that your dad dies. But for some reason all you hearing is sad sighs. You searching for nostalgia but sad you can't cry. So you check your iPod and search for some bad vibes. From that rap guy, raps over sad vibes. I wrote it in an hour, dog. Don't know about your dad's life. You probably was a great dad.